I hope you enjoy that, and I do want to, not as a commercial or anything, but I really do appreciate what James and the Outback have done for us over the years, and we're already talking about Roundup and stuff with them, so we're, they still plan on working with us and things like that, so I just am very grateful for everything they do.
This message brought to you by... No.
Well, it is Mother's Day, and there's a lot of controversy over the woman the media calls Octomom. Most of it centers around what kind of mother she's going to be or can be with the 8 new kids besides the children she already has. Her name is Nadia Denise Dowd Suleiman Gutierrez. She's an American woman who came to attention when she gave birth to the Octoblets in January of 2009. She already had 4 boys and 2 girls born between 2001 and 2006. Now, I'm not this morning here to talk about Miss Gutierrez, but to look at some of the bad moms, the toxic moms in the Bible, and also compare them with some of the good moms that we can read about in the Bible. And, you know, we all have a mother. Even if you never knew them, you had a mother. Had a discussion on Facebook this week. A lady that I love very, very dearly wrote in. I just asked the question. I said, what are you guys preaching on? On Mother's Day, and several people said this or that, and Mary wrote in, not my Mary, but this other woman said, you know, Mother's Day can be very hurtful. Mother's Day sermons can be very hurtful to many people. Many have lost a mother or had a bad relationship with a mother or fought with their mother, people that have are infertile for whatever reason, and that's not what Mother's Day is about. It is a day to honor, just honor mothers and motherhood in general. And I want to look, I think we do have some examples of some bad moms in the scripture, and there's quite a few. I left a bunch of them out. I'm only going to talk about 3 this morning, and I could have done a whole lot of other ones. But there's also a lot of good moms in the Bible. And I think there's a whole lot more of those, actually, than the bad ones. Ones I didn't talk about, what people like Jezebel. I spoke about Athaliah just a few weeks ago with her son Ahaziah got killed, and she went after well, she didn't know about Joaz, or she would have gone. She killed all her grandkids and stuff like that to make sure that nobody was in her way to the throne. I'm not going to talk about them. The first one I want to talk about can be found in 1 Kings chapter 3, and we're not given her name. In 1 Kings chapter 3, beginning in the 16th verse, still laughing over the dog. 1 Kings chapter 3, beginning in verse 16, says, then 2 women who were harlots came to the king, this is Solomon, and stood before him. The one woman said, oh my lord, this woman and I live in the same house, and I gave birth to a child while she was in the house. It happened on the 3rd day after I gave birth that this woman also gave birth to a child, and we were together. There was no stranger with us in the house. That's important because they were harlots. There was no stranger with us in the house, only the 2 of us in the house. This woman's son died in the night because she lay on it. She arose in the middle of the night and took my son from beside me, while your maidservant slept, and laid him in her bosom, and laid her dead son in my bosom. When I rose in the morning to nurse my son, behold, he was dead. But when I looked at him carefully in the morning, behold, he was not my son, whom I had born. Then the other woman said, no, for the living one is my son, and the dead one is your son. But the first woman said, no, for the dead one is your son, and the living one is my son. Thus those spoke before the king. They had an argument right there in front of Solomon. Saying, no, he's mine. The other one said, no, he's mine. And no, he's mine. That's just going back and forth. Then the king said, The one says, this is my son who is living, and your son is the dead one. The other one says, no, for your son is the dead one, my son's the living one. The king said, get me a sword. So they brought a sword before the king, and the king said, divide the living child in two. Give half to the one and half to the other. Then the one whose child was the living one spoke to the king, for she was deeply stirred over her son, and said, oh, my lord, give her the living child and by no means kill him. But the other said, he shall be neither mine nor yours. Divide him. And the other one said, cut him. That way nobody gets him. That seemed fair to her. Then the king said, give the first woman the living child and by no means kill him. She is his mother. When all Israel heard the judgment which the king had handed down, they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to administer justice. Notice the selfishness of this mother who, instead of mourning the loss of her own son, she stole another son. Imagine the selfishness of this woman. Now, they're not in the most, righteous business in the world anyway, but to take a child, and this child that she's stolen is 3 days old. Now, moms, do you think that after 3 days with your child, nursing him, loving on him, doting over him, changing diapers, everything else, do you think that after 3 days somebody can swap your child and you not realize who it is? Or that it's a different child? Is there any mother in here that thinks you could be fooled by that? I don't think. I'm getting a lot of, these kinds of looks. And no, not after 3 days. I mean, I'm not even sure. Even after they first went, like when we had our five, they'd bring the baby over and hand it over to Shelley. And they'd stay there for a little while, and then they'd have to take it and clean the baby off and check it all out and everything like that. I don't think you could do it after that with moms. You might get one past me, but not with moms. Not with moms. And so this mom switched it 3 days. Just think of the selfish, and think of the pain of the other mom who had her son stolen. Boy. Now I can... If we look at the context of the situation, we can kind of understand this a little bit. For a woman to be childless was, in their day and age, a shameful thing. And because if you had children, especially sons, the sons would grow up, they would work, and they would provide for their mother. And so to not have a son... was something very shameful, was something to be avoided. And here, they each had a son within days of each other, and the one son dies, and boy. Now, look at the selfishness of this one mother, stealing another woman's child. This goes on. Still today, we see it every once in a while. Every few months, I see on a news report where some newborn child was stolen by another woman. It's still going on today. But contrast the selfishness of that mother with another mother, a mother that we've heard of, a mother by the name of Mary. Now, Mary was not a harlot. She was a virgin. Now, a harlot might expect to find themselves pregnant at any time. Virgins don't usually expect that to happen to them. But it did with Mary. And we're told that, or she was told that her pregnancy, her son, would be for all mankind. Whereas this harlot wanted her son for herself, mainly. And then when Solomon said, cut him in two, she said, go ahead. Oh, and neither one of us will have them. Mary was told that her son would be for all mankind. And, boy, his name would be Emmanuel. He's God with us. This mother, Mary, who watched her son grow, become a much sought-after teacher. And then she saw him turn into a victim. Victim of the cross. Not only did she watch her son be killed, she watched him be killed for things he did not do, and the worst kind of death imaginable. She saw him die on the cross. Now our first contrast brings together one mother who was selfish. She was willing to have her child killed because of selfishness. And then compare that with one who has watched her child be killed because of the selfishness of everyone but him. We see a definite contrast of mothers. Now, one thing I heard, I remember the movie The Passion of the Christ, the Mel Gibson movie a few years back. One of the criticisms that I heard of the movie was actually one of my favorite parts of the movie. And I don't know how fresh this is in your mind when you saw it or not, but I heard a lot of people condemning that Mary was so involved. That Mel Gibson, he's Roman Catholic, so he's going to have Mary involved. And lots of flashbacks that Mary, through Mary's eyes, lots of little flashback scenes and things like that that aren't really biblical. What? That aren't really biblical. But I thought really added to the movie. Things that we often don't think about as a mother. You know, Mary at one time flashback seeing her son run up the sidewalk and to the house, and he stumbled and tripped, and Mary running out to help, you know, picking him up to try and comfort the little child as he's hurt his knees after the stumbling, and then to see that very one that she comforted being led to Golgotha on the cross. This was Mary. We can get in so many debates about Mary because of what different religious groups have done to her. I mean, we've got churches that pray to her and things like that. And the Bible, that's wrong. But just because other people do wrong things about Mary, let's not neglect Mary. She was the mother of Jesus. She was the one, when the angel came to her and says, "You are the favored one. God has favored you among all other women." Why? Because she was going to be the perfect mother for Jesus. Not selfish. Imagine, Mary had her own kind of toughness that I think mothers truly need. But Mary particularly, here was a virgin that's pregnant. Try explaining that one. And for years and years, she would bear the shame of and the reproach of the claim she was a virgin, yet here was Jesus. And Mary was called the favored one. The other woman is just forgotten about in the annals of history. If it weren't for her being written down as a model of how wise Solomon is or was, we would have never heard about this selfish woman. Well, the next mother that I want to look at can be found in Matthew chapter 14. Matthew chapter 14, beginning in verse 6. This mother was not such a good mother. I think she was a toxic mother. Now, what is a toxic mother? Let me stop here. And as I was going over what I could preach about and think for Mother's Day, and I'll tell you, I think Mother's Day is the hardest for me out of any day of the year as to what to preach about and try and figure out what to preach. And I thought, well, you know, there's all this controversy about Octomom. I said, she's even got a catchy name. So what could we do with Octomom? And I thought, well, we could talk about toxic moms, moms that aren't that great. Toxic mom is, what is toxic? Toxic is poisonous. And so a toxic mom is somebody who kind of ruins the life of their children, or at least puts a very bad blemish on their children's life because of their own desires, because of something they've done or because of how they are. This mother, this other mother, is Herodias, and she's married. Matter of fact, the Bible teaches us that, it makes it clear. Look at Matthew 14, beginning in verse 6. But when Herod's birthday came, the daughter of Herodias danced before them and pleased Herod so much that he promised with an oath to give her whatever she asked. Now, it's Herod's birthday, so there's people there. She comes out, Herodias' daughter comes out, and she dances. And so Herod, trying to impress everybody there, says, you know what, you're such a great dancer, and we enjoyed that, so whatever you want. And he's sitting back, looking around at his friends, I'm sure, and kind of see how generous I am. Well, having been prompted by her mother, if this is Herodias' daughter, this makes this Herodias. She was prompted by her mother. She said, give me here on a platter the head of John the Baptizer. Well, although he was grieved, the king commanded it to be given because of his oath and because of his dinner guests. See, I believe that if his friends weren't there, he would have said, forget it. It's not worth the trouble this could cause. But he had all of his buddies there, all of his friends there for his birthday who heard him say, whatever you want. Well, he sent and had John beheaded in the prison, and his head was brought on a platter and given to the girl, and she brought it to her mother. His disciples came and took away the body and buried it, and they went and reported to Jesus. Now, certainly, we would all want a mother like this, wouldn't we? That when... What would you think of me? This just occurred to me, but this would be very similar. What would you think of me if, you know, Shannon won one of those certificates? What would you think of me if I said, hey, you know, I was wanting to take your mother out to the Outback, and I don't have one, and we're not going to be able to get as much because, you know, it can get expensive over there. And Shannon, why don't you give us yours? Why don't you give us your certificate? What would you think of me as a father? Or what would you think if it were Shelly doing it? What would you think of Shelly as a mother telling Shannon, oh, give it to me, give it to me? Well, this is in a much more important situation. Here we have Herodias saying to her daughter, I don't know what her daughter's name was. That's one. But she says, she goes, I know he said anything you want. Anything you want. But do this for me. I want John's head on a platter. That to me is very selfish. And why would she be doing that? Oh, there you go. Yeah, look at beginning in verse 3 of chapter 14. We see why she had this grudge against John. It says, for when Herod had John arrested, he bound him and put him in prison because of Herodias, the wife of his brother Philip. Now, why would his sister-in-law, why would he, I don't pay a whole lot of attention to what my sister-in-laws have to say. I've got a couple, three actually. Shelley's sister, and I got two brothers that are married. And I don't, and this is going on tape, and I just want you guys to know, I don't pay much attention to them. If they say something outrageous, I'll say, what are you saying that for? Matter of fact, I got one of them mad at me right now because they said something kind of outrageous, and I got on to her about it. And why is he concerned about his sister-in-law? Well, for John, verse 4, had been saying to him, it is not lawful for you to have her. Although Herod wanted to put him to death, he feared the crowd because they regarded him as a prophet. Because Herod was fooling around with his brother Philip's wife, and John was taking a stand on the truth and saying, you should not be doing that. It is not right. And yes, the people did regard him as a prophet, and the people were listening, and the people were saying, we don't think he ought to be doing that. And so there was a little bit of unrest. And Herod, this is Herod Antipas. And this is not Herod the great builder of the temple, the one that was king, that was Herod when Jesus was born. This is his son. And if he puts him to death, the people are just, you just know he's going to revolt. People are going to revolt and have problems. But listen, Herodias was an adultering, two-timing political player whose interest was in her own political power. Why was she sleeping with Herod rather than her own husband? Oh, because Herod was a bigger king than her son or her husband Philip was. He had more power than her husband Philip. She wouldn't let anything like marriage to another man get in her way, or anyone like this loud, uncouth prophet by the Jordan. This guy's wearing camel skins. This guy eats bugs. And he's criticizing me? So she got her daughter to do her dirty work. And dirty work, I chose those words on purpose, because her dancing, we're not talking about the hokey pokey. With her dancing. That's not what she was doing that pleased Herod. This was a very erotic kind of dance, probably a bit of a striptease. And so Herod liked it. Now, that's the kind of woman Herodias was. And my guess is her daughter's dancing because Herodias got her to do it. To again advance her own political ambitions. Now compare that to someone like Hannah. Hannah is just the opposite. Hannah was barren. She wanted a child so bad she couldn't stand it. She went to Shiloh and prayed. She prayed silently, but her mouth moved. She shed tears, and her prayer was between herself and God. Eli the priest saw her and thought she was drunk. When she did have her son, Samuel, she raised him until he was old enough to enter service to God. Then she turned him over to be used for holy service. Not doing strip teases or anything else, but for holy service. But Hannah never forgot her son. 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 19, 20, and 21 says this. And his mother would make him a little robe and bring it to him from year to year when she would come up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. Then Eli would bless Elkanah, that's Samuel's dad, and his wife, Hannah, and say, may the Lord give you children from this woman in place of the one she dedicated to the Lord. And they went to their own home, and the Lord visited Hannah, and she conceived and gave birth to three sons and two daughters. And the boy Samuel grew before the Lord. Now this was a woman who wanted a child, who was not after her own selfish need, maybe a little bit, only in what I said before. A woman who was barren, who had no children, was felt to be full of shame. This was something that they wanted to avoid because in their culture, it just was looked down upon. A woman that could not bear a son. I mean, think of Sarai and the agony. I mean, she at one point gave her concubine Sarah or Hagar over to Abram. So here, you have a son for me. Because she did not want that barrenness. Hannah didn't want that either. But Hannah wanted a child, and she told God, if you give me a son, he will be in your service. And she remained faithful to her oath, and God blessed her greatly. We have mothers like that, unfortunately. We've all heard of women having children so they could get more welfare. We've had women do all kinds of terrible things to their children. They have children so they can, we've heard all kinds of things that they're wanting their children to do, selling drugs even. Some women have babies so they can sell them into slavery in other countries. Don't think that doesn't happen. There's Joe Garman's daughter. Joe Garman heads up ARM. That's American Rehabilitation Ministries. He's a great man of God. His daughter has started what she called Rafa Ministries, and she's going into some of these third world Asian countries in which mothers do have children so that they can sell them off into slavery. And they're trying to get these children and raise them in a godly way rather than send them off to be treated who knows how. That's still going on today. That happens. But Hannah just loved that child. And I think like most mothers here, just loved that child and wanted nothing but the best for that child and raised him up the best that she could. It's quite a contrast. Oh, you know, some mothers show favoritism when they have more than one child, and this is certainly the case with Rebecca. This is my third contrast. Rebecca was the mother of Jacob and Esau. Now, Dad liked Esau better. Dad was Isaac. He liked Esau better, but Rebecca, she liked Jacob. Now, Esau, he was a rough and tough character. Now, I always think of Yosemite Sam when I think of Esau. Yosemite Sam had the big hairy mustache and just rough and tough character and always out doing something. What's the word I'm looking for? Stupid? Manly? No, he's just rough and tumble kind of guy. And Esau, I don't know about the big red mustache, but he was hairy. He did have red hair. And he was hairy all over. I should have Dwayne stand up and let everybody read the T-shirt. Make sure you look at his T-shirt on your way out. And talks about being hairy. And that was Esau. And Isaac loved Esau better than Jacob because Jacob was pretty much a mama's boy. He was not as athletic. He was not as rough and tumble as Esau was, and he didn't have the hairy skin. He was more, and I use this word carefully, he was more effeminate than Esau was. Rather smooth-skinned and just, he hung around his mother a lot more than his dad. And well, Jacob was his mom's favorite. And she favored him in a way that was not above being deceitful in order to get her way for herself or her husband. In Genesis chapter 27. Now this, I'm just going to read here. I've got 17 verses I want to look at. Beginning in verse 1 of Genesis chapter 27. Now when it came about, when Isaac was old and his eyes were too dim to see, that he called his older son Esau and said to him, "My son..." And he said to him, "Here I am." Isaac said, "Behold, now I am old, and I do not know the day of my death. Now then, please take your gear, your quiver, your bow, and go out in the field and hunt game for me. And prepare a savory dish for me, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat. so that my soul may bless you before I die. And you got to realize the blessing here, a very important thing, very important aspect in the life of these very early people of God, these people God is using to bring about the Messiah later. So I want to have a nice kind of a last meal. He said, I don't know when I'm going to die, but bring me something good to eat and I'll bless you, and then it'll be okay if I do die. Now, verse 5. Rebekah was listening while Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game to bring home, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, Behold, I heard your father speak to your brother Esau, saying, Bring me some game and prepare a savory dish for me, that I may eat and bless it in your presence of the Lord before my death. Now, therefore, my son, listen to me as I command you. Go now to the flock and bring me two choice young goats from there, that I may prepare them as a savory dish for your father, such as he loves. Then you shall bring it to your father, that he may rest, so that he may bless you before his death. Jacob answered his mother Rebekah, Behold, Esau my brother is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me. Then I will be as a deceiver in his sight. Well, you know, when you deceive, that's what you are, as a deceiver. But he says, Then I'll be a deceiver in his sight, and I will bring upon myself a curse and not a blessing. But his mother said to him, Your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice, you know, do what your mother says, and go get them for me. So he went and got them and brought them to his mother, and his mother made savory food, such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the best garments of Esau, her elder son, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And she put the skins of the young goats on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. She also gave the savory food and the bread which she had made to Jacob, her son. And we know the account. She goes in. Jacob says, Well, you sound kind of funny. Smells like you. And feels like you. Just doesn't sound like it. But he goes ahead and gives him the blessing. Esau comes back. And remember earlier in this account, Esau sold the blessing for a pot of porridge. And so Jacob was taking what was rightfully his, but it was Isaac's prerogative to give the blessing to whomever he wanted to. And it was Jacob who got the blessing. Now, well, that little bit of trickery there on the part of Rebekah. And compare that to Naomi in the book of Ruth. She lost her husband. She lost her two sons. All that was left was Orpah. Now, that's not Oprah. That's Orpah. And Ruth, her two daughters-in-law. But she took them as her own. So much so that when she sent them to their own land to find husbands, this is what it says. This is Ruth chapter 1, verse 11 and following. But Naomi said, Return, my daughters. Why should you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Return, my daughters. Go, for I am too old to have a husband. If I said I have hope, if I should even have a husband tonight and bear sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is harder for me than for you, for the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me. And they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Then she said, Behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods.